Hi, this is Phil Kelm of Gitchigumi Cider Works, located in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. And you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 118. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are having dinner, that is right, dinner, with Philip Kem of Gitchigumi Cider Works. There's going to be more on that chat in just a moment. Welcome back to all the regular listeners of Cider Chat. And if you are new to this podcast, well, I hope that you certainly enjoyed enough to hit subscribe right now, because when we go down this rabbit hole into the land of Ciderville, as we are doing, you don't really want to leave. So this is a nice way to place that little bookmark, if you will, to be able to keep on coming back to something. Because we have a hell of a lot of fun out in Ciderville. There is just good stuff happening all over the map, and there's a cider for every palate. There's scenes that will welcome you anywhere around the world. And that is a nice thing when you live in a big, big world like we do, to know that, you know, you could find cider in Tasmania, on the mainland of Australia, in Japan, in China, in Latvia, different parts of the U.S. I mean, who would think that, you know, in San Diego there's cider? But yes, there is. So if you have friends who are out traveling, a nice thing to do is to say, hey, you know, I know about this podcast. You might want to subscribe to it. And if you're touring about, then go to Cider Chat and see if there's been an episode about that. And you kind of get the lowdown on that area and kind of fine-tune your travel a little bit. I just find it so amazing how interconnected we are. So that's a little bit about this podcast. Do subscribe. That would be super cool. And next, I want to go into some news, a little bit of a sharing news that, of course, is focused around cider. So we'll be right back with that. Many of the regular listeners know of this here podcast. I was recently at the United States Association of Cider Makers annual conference called CiderCon, and I had a couple interesting, you know, rides up and down on the elevator, meeting people along the way. And one person was the head cider maker at Threadbare Cider and Mead, a cider company based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Now, first off, before I go to Threadbare, if you want to have like a fun weekend and want to land at a place that has a good airport hub, go to Pittsburgh, because there is so much food and good libations happening in that city. You could seriously have a great weekend, kind of romantic getaway, or even like a family getaway for the weekend. Just beholding the city overall. If you go on the south side of the river, you could take like the tram up and take the slow ride up and just overlook the city. There's beautiful steel bridges, the Carnegie Mellon. I mean, there's all this amazing artwork in terms of buildings, the artistic detail there. And I've had the opportunity to be in Pittsburgh for quite a bit over the course of my career for different business trips, and I really love it. You could go to the Andy Warhol Museum, which is a total trip. Lots of fun. Very interactive. And then there's also the Botanical Garden, which will blow your freaking mind. And this is a little, like, something you just think about. Botanical gardens, aquariums, they have sometimes evening events where you could go and have like a date night at the aquarium or botanical garden or museum, and they will also sell wine or beer and hopefully cider. So if you are a cider maker in like a big city, check out these places and get your cider in there. Because I was in San Francisco at, I believe it was a Museum of Natural History, right in like Golden Gate Park, and I was so relieved to find Golden State Cider Company. It was like kind of a mission. Let's see if there's cider. And yeah, there was cider. So getting back to Pittsburgh, I'm hoping that that might become an opportunity too, because when I had a layover, I went to the Botanical Garden and all they had was wine. I mean, I may do. I like wine, no doubt about it. People consider cider to be a kind of wine. I'm going to whine about that a little bit because I feel it's just so unique. It's just not wine. But anyways, I digress. There was a cider maker that I met at CiderCon. His name is Brian. He is the head of production, and he's the head cider maker at Threadbare Cider and Mead, which is based in Pittsburgh. And while I was at CiderCon riding up the elevator, we met, and he said, "Hey, we want some cider?" So I said, "Yeah." And he passed me a bottle of both the dry and the 412 City Cider, which they put in these beautiful 750 ml bottles. And then we kind of followed up online, and he wrote to me that both of these were bottle conditioned, undisgorged, which means that you bottle your cider, and what the result will happen when it's not going to be disgorged is that there's going to be like a residual type of yeast that could sit at the bottom of the bottle or on the side, whatever position that you have it in. You shouldn't freak out about that. This is what happens. It just happens. Not a big deal. You could just think and like decant it if you want to. You like pour it off into another bottle. It's not that big of a deal. It will affect the taste when you have some yeast. So if you go into that knowing that, then you could kind of accept any kind of yeast flavor. If you don't like that, then yeah, having that yeast sediment could be a little bit of a deal. It didn't take away from my experience with Threadbare. I could see that, you know, this is kind of a new cider who's kind of getting their place, and I really support that. And could feel the amount of care and love that they're putting into both of these bottles. But let me tell you a little bit more what you could expect as we keep our eye on Threadbare and what they're doing there and what Brian's doing. They're producing these bottle condition. Again, you know, you could decant it. They have these core dry ciders that have about 2% residual sugar. And they're also having some barrel aged ciders too. They're working with a distillery called Wiggle. I love that. Wiggle Whiskey. And actually, Wiggle Whiskey, he says, is up in my corner, Ciderville. I'm not really sure about that. I should check that out. But they're getting these rye barrels, putting in cider, and they're having it be a wild ferment. So that's pretty neat. And it's going to come out as like a Spanish sidra. So it'll be a little of that kind of sour cider. And either you love it or you don't, or you learn how to love it, because it's a style that you want to be able to appreciate for what it is. Just a lot of people just don't know how to eat it, nor do they know that there's certain foods that you should really have with a sidra that really accentuates that apple. That's what they're doing there. Of course, they also make mead and are really trying to, you know, work with the apples they have in Pennsylvania. We know there's a lot of culinary apples, and certainly Go Team Go in Pennsylvania as maybe they start bringing in cider apples. It was so nice to meet you, Brian. Thank you again for that cider. I'm enjoying it, and I'll be opening up the 412 City Cider soon. Gearing up to go to Baltimore, I was in the hunt for restaurants that were BYOB, which means bring your own bottle, because I knew that I might be able to arrange some evening chats over dinner that would allow me to, one, have dinner, which was a good thing for a very action-packed week for me. I was working like, oh man, my mom would say a bat out of hell, which it was true. And also be able to have a nice time sitting down with a maker, enjoying their cider and enjoying a meal, because cider and food is just the perfect match. So it was really fantastic when I found out that there was a restaurant called Ebenezer's Ethiopian Restaurant in Baltimore, which is where this chat took place, and I highly recommend it. In fact, there's going to be photos of this restaurant on the show notes to this episode here, number 118, and there's also going to be a video upload too that you'll be able to see. because Ethiopian food is very unique. There's no utensils at all. You have a big, giant, circular dish that has this, I think it's actually a gluten-free, it's made with teff, nut flour, pancake. And on that pancake is all the different meals that you ordered. And then you're given a basket with napkins that are essentially teff napkins. So they're edible napkins. I call them napkins, but they're not napkins. I'm sure there's a correct word for that. And you rip that apart, the teff, the kind of bread pancake, and use that to grab the food to eat it. It was a very intimate kind of meal, but Philip was a perfect person to go to this, being that he's very international, has had a very unique experience of traveling around the world, setting up brewery systems all over the map. And more recently, he is a partner in the first South Korean cidery. The first cidery that I know about, I'm sure there are probably other ones, but in India, a cidery in India, and India, yes, has lots of apples. And, of course, the Gichigumi, which is based up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So we're going to cover all that, and we're going to be in this food situation. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed both being there and editing and listening to it again with you. I do want to encourage you to go out and seek out unique food styles or even classic styles to your region, and do that at restaurants that do have BYOB, especially when they're not offering cider, because it's a lot of fun. It's a heck of a lot of fun. So that's what we're going to do. So let's all now grab a glass and join this chat with Philip Kelm of Gichigumi Ciderworks while we have dinner at Ebenezer's Ethiopian Restaurant in Baltimore.
Shall we imbibe?
Definitely.
All right. This is our premium product, Entropy. It's made from 100% wild foraged apples, spontaneously fermented, after which we put it into white oak barrels and let it age for a year, and then bottle condition in champagne bottles.
That is one cork.
Barrels cleared up brilliantly. So it's racked into barrels after primary fermentation in stainless steel. There's no plastic in my cidery.
Beautiful.
Cheers.
Wow, there's a lot going on there. I'm looking at your glass right now, and there's a lot of little tiny bubbles there. Just really consistent.
They're not a dirty glass either.
No, they're not a dirty glass. Just to let Ciderville know, Philip and I are sitting in this Ethiopian restaurant in Baltimore right now. We're the only people in the restaurant. What a joy to be able to sit down with you and just be able to talk cider and have the whole restaurant to ourselves. It was like,
good choice.
I know, right on.
I'm looking forward to the food. I'm fairly starving, and I've never had Ethiopian, so this is going to be a real treat.
And I'm kind of curious how it's going to go with cider.
You know, it sounds like it could. Mm-hmm. I don't know what cider doesn't go with.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
It goes with seafood. It goes with
everything.
Pretty much. I'm working on a cidery in India, and the people there are telling me cider was made for Indian food. It's so good. It will complement Indian food exactly. But I hear the same thing out of the Korean people that I make cider for, and they're like, wow, with our spicy and our
vinegar-based kimchi and our fermented foods, and this is perfect to go with it. And well, it also goes well in Upper Peninsula with some delicately fried venison chops.
Mmm. All that sounds good by me.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the cidery in general, in terms of how you're getting your apples, because you're doing it in a very unique way.
Yeah.
You're putting the call out to people, and this is not like you're going to a particular orchard necessarily, or are you doing a little bit of everything?
No, we're not going to a large producer to get juice delivered to our facility. We're asking the people that normally do foraging in our neck of the woods for mushrooms or raspberries or blackberries or blueberries or strawberries. We have a lot of foragers in our neck of the woods because we have such good fruit, and we offer them an alternative in the fall to go out and make even more money, because we're offering real nice rates for real nice apples.
Mm-hmm.
These apples are wild chance seedlings, mostly from deer droppings, probably, or raccoon, or whatever. Probably not raccoon, possum, skunk. Anyway, these trees are chance seedlings. They're non-pedigreed and they grow wild, but they do produce tart, hard, sour apples that are perfect for cider, and we can get them by the ton. So we ask people to go out and
buy
gather
the ton.
Them.
By the ton. Now hold your horses here. By the ton for people to just kind of be scrumping apples, essentially going out. And
yeah, our best load this year was three guys that went out in the morning on a Saturday, came back that evening and said, we have two pickup trucks full. They had over 2,500 pounds.
Wow.
So I gave the three of them a check for $530 some.
Good day's work on their side.
Yeah.
And fun.
Yeah.
And hopefully fun.
Oh, it's beautiful time of the year to be out in the fresh air. It's cool and they're gathering apples.
Wow.
And a hard day's worth of work. And they can sit down and they said, okay, now where's this cider being served? Because we're going there and we're going to have a nice dinner.
Absolute right? connection. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I've also had a kid as young as probably 11 years old come in with his mother. And the third time he came in with a pickup load full of apples, I said, well, this is a lot of apples. You're getting a lot of money. What are you going to do? You must have like $800 by now. And he said, I'm going to go buy a saddle for my horse.
Aw, wow.
And I was really happy to be part of a kid working hard and getting what he wants so that he can enjoy his horse, you know? I mean, what kind of...
Yeah.
I'm really happy to be part of that. And I can make a great product out of what he brings me. It's not like I'm reaching out for charity. It's a reasonable price for a reasonable product.
Absolutely.
We're paying 20 cents a pound, which is oftentimes more than people get for their cultivated apples with pesticides. This is no pesticides, totally organic, nothing added, no sulfites, no water, no yeast, no sugar, only apples left to do their own thing in the right environment.
And late season, so they're not being picked too early.
That's right. We do sweet cider or otherwise known as apple juice. We do apple juice for friends and family and other people in the early season. And then when the first frost comes, that's when we start collecting it for our own hard cider use. And the I'm really happy with this. We're just about, in another week, I'll have 2016 apples that have been put through primary in a year in oak barrels, and I'm going to put that into bottles very soon so that it'll be ready in the spring, and that'll be 2016. So we're about 2 years in the making for this.
That's That is a really unique, I want to say business model, but it's bigger than a business model. It's like a community kind of sustainable agricultural model in a way.
We're trying to...
So full circle.
Yeah, we're trying to take what grows in Upper Michigan naturally and normally falls to the ground for deer or just mm-hmm. rots.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to add value to a forgotten agricultural product and make something truly phenomenal out
mm-hmm.
of it.
Mm-hmm.
And put our little tiny city on a map for, hey, there's good cider way up here too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the apples are picked by local people who get a little boost in their income, or landowners that have a lot of apples, they don't know what to do with them, or... Mm.
And how often do you know what the variety of the apples are?
No, there's no pedigree. No. Apples.
I mean, that's pretty amazing, because tasting the cider is a very well-balanced cider. So listeners should know that. I mean, we're drinking something that is not, like, going all over the place. It's a very straightforward cider.
I'd say it's got a bit of a Brett on the nose.
Yeah, but exactly kind of like where you want it. Then what's nice about it is this isn't like a quick process cider. You're allowing it to condition, which a lot of people don't have that experience on an aged cider.
Which, well, I'm lazy, so I only get to it when I
well,
have to.
Well, that's one way to approach it. But I really think it's a good way to approach cider making if you could do that. I mean, certainly there's a quick turnover, but this is how I've always made cider, so I really appreciate it because it really develops, and a cider does age. Some people just don't even realize that, right?
Right. This is not a blow-and-go method. This is take your time.
Yeah.
I went to Normandy and tried... We went to 38 different cideries in Normandy. I'll go back and get the rest of them one of these days and go into Brittany and... Southern more, where they use a little bit more pears in their product. But this is as fine a product as I've had in Normandy. I love their approach, and I try to follow it myself.
Mm-hmm. With the wild yeast.
With the wild fermentation.
Yeah, yeah. How do you manage that with the wild fermentation?
We make sure that we have really sound, ripe fruit. So, meaning that the fruit has been collected and allowed to mature for at least a few days to a week to develop the sugars after they've been picked or harvested.
Mm-hmm.
And then we make sure that we don't have any broken skin. That's our... bottom line is no broken skin. So if there's a twig that's
stuck in it,
it goes in the cull pile.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we get rid of everything that's got broken skin, and we go for really clean apples. And then we have a 3-stage cleaning system to make sure that the apples are very clean. And people think, well, but you're taking all the yeast off of the skin and it's not going to ferment well. Actually, there are yeast and other beneficial microbes inside the apple, not only on the skin. So we don't sanitize perfectly the skin with like harsh chemicals or anything. There's no chemicals at all.
Mm-hmm.
But we do wash them really thoroughly and make sure that there's no debris on them at all before we shred them and press them
mm-hmm.
and put them into our tank for a spontaneous fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
And we add the new juice bit by bit every day for several weeks into a tank. So it's hard to get exactly what was the bricks of that apple mix.
Interesting.
Well, I'm not sure. Today it was this, yesterday it was this, day before it was this. Well, we have similar volume, so I can get a rough idea. But the bottom line is that I call this entropy because it's kind of like letting nature take its way and have its way with apples that are wild grown. And this is the human pleasing end result of that. It's just been left to its own desire to go where it wants to, with delicate hand by me in temperature mostly, and aging in oak. But I might almost want to call it infinity, because that's how many apples that I use. Every apple off of every tree is a whole different species, right, or a whole different subspecies, and we don't even know about them. We're just grinding them up and using them for cider.
I think that's fantastic, because you certainly probably have been driving around in your neck of Ciderville and noticing all these apples everywhere. And just, they're hanging in through the winter, sometimes freezing out there, and being picked up and eaten. And now to have this, is this pretty well known in your community?
Our cider's getting more well known, but everybody knows that there's apples just everywhere. Mm. But when you're local and you grow up with it, you think it's natural. And you think that, well, those are for the deer. You can't do anything with those. Oh, well, we make applesauce, or we make pie. Well, okay.
Yeah.
But that's a minor, insignificant fraction of what's out there. And I want all of them to be turned into cider. And I want to be the guy to do it.
I know that feeling. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very cool. Oh, here comes some of our food. Look at this. Here we go.
In the show notes for this episode 118, you will see photos and a short video of what we were served at Ebenezer's Ethiopian Restaurant in Baltimore. Now, back to this chat with Philip Kelm of Kichigumi Ciderworks.
What's your name?
Sal.
Sal?
Yes, sir.
Nice, nice.
Thank you.
No problem.
Sweet,
yeah. You guys
sweet.
Need anything, let me know.
We're good. We're
all
good.
Right.
This looks fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Well, here we go.
Oh, yeah. Good choice. Yeah, I like it.
Mmm. So kind of spicy. And then, I know it's going to be perfect with that sip of cider. This is like the best way for me to like go to CiderCon, is to go out at night and bring our own bottles of cider and do it this way.
Well, this is nice.
Thank you for being game for it. I knew that you would be. I had no doubt.
Yeah,
I just had no doubt.
Game for anything.
Yeah.
I live to try new things. I mean, life is short. I don't want to go to bed at the end of it going, damn it, I never had Ethiopian food.
Well, I'm glad to be part of this journey. It's been a while since I've had Ethiopian food, and I'm not disappointed.
Yeah, I've never had it.
I like the fact that you eat with your hands and you're kind of like digging in, and it's kind of primal in a way, but feels kind of a nice way to have cider, because you're engaged in your food. You're not just kind of doing it on the side. What do you call that model where you're having people pick it and bring it?
Oh, I don't know. It's similar to getting your apples from the next door farmer, except that it's gathering instead.
Yeah, I have to admit, you're the only maker I've met who's doing it this way. I thought it was brilliant, especially when so many makers are out there hustling and hustling and hustling, and picking apples is really hard work. You know, it's really hard work. So having folks help out with that process, they get a certain kind of ownership or pride into it because they pick the apples.
Yeah.
I mean, that just goes full circle.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. We go to festivals, little local festivals, and people come up to our stand, I want tickets for this because I brought apples to make it. So, yeah, it's full circle.
Definitely. And I want to talk about your bottle. Just the label work. I have to admit that it's one of the best brand labels I've ever seen.
Oh, I should get my recorder on because my graphic designer would love to hear you
say
that.
Not just for the, you know, just for Ciderville to know. Whoops, I'm kind of having a little food mishap here.
There's no mishaps.
You know, you have these upside down apples that are like trees, just beautiful. But the writing, the actual writing on the side of what the vision is, I really enjoyed reading that.
Okay.
I have that up on our Facebook page for Cider Chat.
And the other side is mostly what the government makes us to say.
So this is 6.9%, so you're still at, you know, a very approachable level for cider.
Yeah.
It makes it very sessionable.
Yeah, we were lucky this year. We had our analysis come back at 6.95, and I said,
wow.
Just under the 7% limit that the TTB gets worried about you, and all you need to be construed as a wine.
Mm-hmm. No, it's really perfect. I also love the spiral under entropy.
Oh.
That really caught me. I have to admit, before, I mean, I met you last year in Chicago, and then I had a bottle of this. You sent the bottle my way.
Yeah.
I actually had it, and I was looking, and I was like, I loved everything about it before opening it. And I don't say that lightly, having drank a lot of cider, but there was something about the bottle I think should really speak to the personality of the company, the person, the makers. And that's what I was looking forward to tonight, kind of hanging out with you, because getting to know, like, who is this person that would, like, put this, like, spire on there? Pick a word, like, entropy, having these upside-down apples, and then hearing about a lot of your work.
Well, the entropy, the word entropy, I'll ask your listeners to look it up, because it's interesting word.
It is. It's a big word. You don't choose that lightly, I suppose, or
no,
you do.
It kind of dawned on me that it's really not me doing the work. It's a force of nature. And I can't buck that. I can't try to push it in another direction.
Right.
I can gently guide it by stainless steel fermentation to begin with. And then after the primary, rack it off the lees and put it into French white oak.
Mm.
And then let it mellow a year where
the
it clarifies.
Oak, the oak hat is just, you're getting fresh barrels or?
No, actually we're adding a few newer barrels every year. And one of these days I'll start retiring them.
Hmm.
But we're looking for a light, because it's in the oak for a year. So if they were new barrels,
yeah,
it would
be
over
the top,
over oaked.
Yeah,
and this is not over oaked. It's there's just enough oak in there. I think the oak and the Brettanomyces and the apple aroma. Everything comes together just right.
From here, yours looks darker, but when I hold up closer,
mine's fuller. here,
well,
let's make yours darker.
Okay, there we go.
We start off with a bunch of things and end up with a bunch of new players at the end as far as microbial activity goes. So it starts off with Candida and Picea and apiculates, and ends up with, you know, in the middle there's Saccharomyces, and at the end there's Brettanomyces, and the whole
thing.
It's
a party. Party in glass.
And you know, you need different people to come to a party. Not everyone comes and goes at one point.
Right. Exactly. Definitely.
You get the ones that have a few and leave early. That's the apiculates. And then the Saccharomyces are the bulk that lasts through most of the party. And then you got those Brettanomyces who stick around and stink up the place at the end. And
it's so true.
And the whole thing comes together.
Yeah, and that makes for a very good celebratory party. yeah, cider is always a party in your mouth when it's really made well. I like the depth of this, too.
It's not heavy. Mm. It's not overwhelming. It's still approachable. I hear people say, oh, I like it because it tastes like champagne. Hmm. Well, okay, not really, but I'm glad you think that. It might be because it's carbonated similarly.
Well, that's a growing palate, you know, that kind of speaks that way. So that's understandable. So you have this cider. You do... Oh, we're loving it.
Does that mean anything?
I think we're doing maybe a couple more napkins.
Yeah. Just
as we're coming through it. Napkins, I'm sure,
no problem.
Is what we need.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought these were napkins.
You know, well, they kind of are. They kind of are.
I've been using them to clean my hands.
That's how you do it.
Oh, God.
Terrible. So you have the Entropy. You also have another cider. You have two ciders, right?
No, we have more. Number three now.
Oh. Well, what's number two? Do you consider Entropy number one?
Yes.
Okay.
Number two is a more approachable commercial product that we make from non-wild apples, commercially grown apples. That one is made from commercially grown apples that we... take a little bit more of a commercial process and have only a month between fermentation and sales. That one is called Dancing Fat Man. It's a little bit sweeter and it's very apple forward and it has none of the funky. So it's a much different cider. This one is more of a wine bottle, haute cuisine, little more fancy cider. Now the Dancing Fat Man is more of a session cider. It's a tiny
Fat Man. You gotta love that name. There you go.
I wonder where I got that name from. It couldn't have been me. Yeah, so anyway, Dancing Fat Man. It's a what I would call a session cider. It's a little more sweet than this, but not so sweet that you'll get filled up.
Hmm.
It's very apple aroma, apple taste forward. We still ferment it cold and slow, but we do use a commercial yeast because we do want that one to turn out more or less the same. It's mostly sold in kegs now, but I do have a canning machine on the way, and I will start canning it in May.
Little four packs, like of
it will be in 16-ounce cans.
16-ounce cans, okay.
And I'm not sure about the packaging format because I don't like excess packaging, so the four pack.
The plastic,
yeah, but it's recyclable.
I know. It's a tough one. I like those plastic caps, but they're also a little bit of a, I don't know, I don't like them too. And if I
think I like them more than I don't. It's either that or those plastic, like those rings, those polyethylene rings,
the cover?
Like I mean, six-pack rings.
Yeah. Well, when I get those, I cut them all because I don't want the penguins to get their head over their head. Like, what is happy feet or something like that. But, I think it's good because it keeps the top clean, too, so there's a lot of good things about it.
Oh, that's true. I never thought about that.
When it's sitting there in the warehouse and, you know, I always wash the top of a can. So now I don't feel like I have to in the same way that I did with those like little plastic clear rings. Because who knows what's scrambling across on top of the can.
No doubt.
So, you know, in a giant warehouse.
To be fair, I have selected our distributors base number one on how local they are.
Oh.
And number two, how clean they are.
Well, that's good. How do you rate a distributor on how clean they are?
I go visit them and walk around and look for leaking cans of, oh, this is our discard pile over here. And if I see stuff leaking into their storm drain or off in a corner or rotten pallets or something smells bad, I just don't want anything to do with it.
You don't want to go there. Yeah, that's a good point.
So I've been fortunate to deal with a couple of really great distributors that are like super clean. The last people I was at, they don't have either Budweiser or Miller, so they're not the biggest players, but they are clean and local, and I think they can represent me well.
Get you on the shelves.
I think they can do a good job. I think maybe I want to steer away from the big guys because they don't need me. Maybe they don't care. Maybe. Didn't mean to say that. Edit that out. Mention names. But people that have their trade already established and don't need my help need not apply. And those people that want to work with me, because, hey, we're local. My kids go to the same school as everyone
right, you know.
Right. I mean,
it's all good.
It's all good.
Your background is in engineering.
Engineering and fermentation science.
Fermentation?
Yep.
But your first engineering, and then you went into fermentation. Or was it simultaneous?
I actually started brewing beer when I was too young to buy it. So, 16, we went to the liquor store. And the old guy says, what are you doing here? Are you too young to buy anything? And I said, no, we can buy these beer kits. And he says, well, I can't stop you from buying the beer kits. I read about it in the Mother Earth News that, hey, you can make beer by buying a can of syrup and adding some hops and adding the yeast. And that got me into it to begin with. But after... And during college, even, I continued that because I was cheap. And I had to work for my money at an A&W restaurant, flipping burgers to work my way through college. And I couldn't afford beer at the bar, so I made my own. Unfortunately, I learned that a fermentation bucket is not good if it used to have pickles in it, because
that's true. It's a little bit something in there already.
Oh man, it tasted like pickle. We called it pickle beer. It was strong, but it was,
we still drank it.
It was like, you know, the McDonald's slices of pickles, and it was was an acquired taste. I didn't mean to acquire it, but
you did. Well,
it came.
Wow.
Those were the days, I tell you, man. Pickle beer.
Yeah. Probably only made that once.
I did, yeah.
Okay.
And
so
I never did it again.
All right.
In that pickle bucket. I used that for something else, but it wasn't beer. Anyway, after graduating from college, I started work in nuclear power and quickly decided that wasn't my gig. So I took my mechanical engineering degree and said, well, how about beer brewing? I always liked that. And I started doing a lot of home brewing. And I went to a course at the Siebel Institute of Technology, and I worked with a little brew pub at the time and interned at Goose Island, which was a tiny little brew pub at the time in 1991.
That's right, and it got a big name, and now it
now
was
it's worldwide.
It was owned, then it was bought out by InBev.
And we have one of those in South Korea, a Goose Island brew pub.
No kidding.
Amongst
worldwide.
Many other countries, they are huge. So Chris Hall was a mentor of mine,
yeah,
and Greg Hall Or, no. Yeah. Chris Bird and Greg Hall. Chris Bird is now with Revolution Brewing Company. Greg Hall has now moved on from brewing at Goose Island to selling out and buying a cidery.
Virtue
mm-hmm, is now Michigan. Sold out mm-hmm. to
InBev.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think it's about... So I saw him years later at a cider conference, and he says, "Hey, what are you doing here? You follow my coat steps again?" I said, "Yeah, I think I am. Yeah, I guess so. If you're here, then I guess so. It makes sense."
So a lot of lineage there. So you went to Siebel?
A lot of people just crossing the
sea. It is. I mean, certainly that's happening in the cider world big time, I think.
I would think so.
Yeah.
In the beer world, it's happened before.
It happened before, and now we're seeing that crossover in cider. But cider's kind of unique because it's not just pulling from the beer world, it's also pulling from the wine world.
Yeah.
So it's that middle child of the libations world.
Being pulled from both directions.
But could
I
handle
want to
it.
Be with
it
mom.
Handle
I want
it.
To be with dad.
It could handle it. That's, I'm not worried about cider not handling that. Well, everybody has a different palate, and the beautiful thing about cider is it has this range that... Would you agree it blows beer off the map in that way?
I do, because beer is... Well, for me, I made my whole life brewing and installing breweries and drinking beer. And cider has a wider range of flavor possibilities. And... I think it's also a little bit, for me, more to my taste, less sugary and more satisfying from being made from a single fruit instead of adding chocolate and vanilla and different malts and different hops and all of that. I get it. But instead of baking a cake out of many different things, I prefer to have just the simple juice of the apple expressed in so many different ways by the handling of the person making it.
The cool thing about apples is that all those things that you do with beer to kind of keep on changing the style, you just get that with the thousands and thousands of varieties of apples that are out there.
And
you don't have to add anything to it.
And with the thousands of varieties of microbes that were working on my entropy.
Right. And from what I understand with yeast, the yeast isn't necessarily on the apple. It's, well, not, no, it is on the apple, but the
and
percentage.
In the apple.
And in the apple, but the highest percentage is in the pressing equipment and the room that's there. That's where you're getting a lot of it.
Yeah, that's
but supposed. Unless you're like super, you know, sterile, as Americans can be, but you've been to Normandy.
Yeah.
You and I both know that
terroir
is like kicking around, not just on that pear or that apple. But I actually think, you know, the science of it is that, and I have this somewhere, it's almost like 3/4, you know, of the yeast is coming from the actual setting.
Yeah,
where it's being made like
yesterday's lecture. Like they said it was more than that. Yeah. They said it was upwards of 50-75%.
Just to clarify, Philip and I are saying the exact same things. I'm saying 3/4 and he's saying 75%. And that's the amount of like free radical agents of wild yeast that is out there, even if you clean the apples. Now, also to bring up to date, about now, we had finished that bottle of Gichigumi Entropy, and we're about ready to open a bottle of single varietal Wixen cider from Good Intent Cider that Philip had picked up while he was on the Pennsylvania tour pre-conference at CiderCon. So let's go back to that as we delve into tasting notes and kind of pull apart two different palettes and two different approaches to one cider. This again is episode 118 with Philip Kelm of Gitchigumi Cider Company in Michigan.
Good Intent Cider from Gettysburg and Belfonte, Pennsylvania, 9%.
The aroma is similar to the flavor. What does it evoke for you? Because I've got something in my mind that I know it's a lot like.
It's kind of perfumey to me is what I get. It's a sweet. I'm wondering if they've done some kind of back sweeten on the Wixen, because I've had Wixen, not at all. Straight
he
up.
He says it's nothing. Straight up. He said it was like 18 bricks.
Okay. And did he add a yeast to it? Yes. It's not
actually, I think he did.
Yeah. So it's not a wild
ferment. Yeah, I know he did.
Yeah. So I guess that's probably the yeast that I'm getting
there.
I
know it's a Epernay. Epernay yeast. Some people call it DV10.
Mm-hmm.
There's other names for it, but it's Epernay Champagne yeast. Because I asked him about it. It's, for me, highly evocative of a fruit that my wife is Thai.
Yeah, very fruity.
And I love a fruit grown all over Southeast Asia called jackfruit.
Oh, I don't know jackfruit.
You do.
Oh.
It's in the gum called juicy fruit.
Juicy fruit is flavored
as jackfruit.
Jackfruit, yeah.
So do you get juicy fruit
out
of it?
I totally get juicy fruit out of it, yeah. Well, that was that kind of perfumey floral. I mean, when you bite into juicy fruit, it's...
Exactly. That's jackfruit.
But I just want to clarify to Ciderville listening on here is that it's not disruptive to my senses at all. It's really kind of, oh, wow, that's kind of interesting and enjoyable. And it you get that in an apple. When you bite into an apple, you get that kind of juicy, fruity, floral, perfumey.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes you do. I mean, it depends on the apple. And this one is straw color, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say so. This is 100% Wixen.
Nice.
They call it candy-like aroma, but candy-like could be juicy fruit.
Right.
I think the alcohol and there is some kind of sweetness or body is balanced with a really it's fairly tart.
Yeah.
Everyone says, "Well, that's too tart for me," and I'm like, "Wow, really? Is it?
It's not." No.
I don't see it that way.
Yeah, the nose really opens up sitting in the glass a bit there, too. Like, I really tend towards this type of cider right here.
Do you?
Yeah,
the
absolutely.
Wild kind of Brettanomyces.
Wild, yeah, I like it.
Funk.
But your Brettanomyces is so subtle. I like it because I feel... I like drinking cider now that tells me about the terroir or the region. So drinking Gitchigumi Entropy tells me about the terroir.
It should.
It should tell you. And that's what excites me.
It does.
And
it will.
Yeah. This is what... So I'm tasting the flavor of Michigan. Where are you in Michigan, if we're looking
all
at it?
All the way up in the top.
All the very top,
this
top, top.
This is, Chicago down here, Detroit over here. No, we're in the upper
way
part.
Up top.
Where there's not even land connection between upper and lower
Holy
peninsulas
smokes.
Of Michigan.
Wow.
There's a 5-mile bridge that connects us, and we're all the way across that, and then all the way up in this little thumb area that sticks up into Lake Superior.
So you're not in like the wine trail region?
No.
No. What else is up there where you are?
There's a few moose.
Well, they're
wolves.
I have moose too, but I also have some
other
stuff.
There's wolves,
is it agricultural area?
No, it's not. That's why I'm kind of like the new 20th century Johnny or 21st century Johnny Appleseed, taking what's left over from these ancient farms And all of these chance seedlings that get eaten and dropped and grown on the side of the road by countless animals and humans and who knows what. And there's all these trees full of apples everywhere. Yeah. Every tree has a different apple.
Yeah. This is a good cider, no doubt. It's well made. It speaks volumes about the cider maker. My hankering is I would like to taste that Wixen as a wild ferment so I can know what's going on there in Pennsylvania.
Right.
That would excite me at a whole different level.
Because
I think the yeast is really impacting the apple
is.
Here.
It is.
Time.
It is.
And so it gives me another profile and leads me away from the apple and more towards the yeast. I really want to be tasting the apple. What's going on there? I don't care how subtle it is. I want to go into that subtle.
And by the way, this has yeast in it too, but the yeast came with the apple.
Well,
so
exactly.
So it's almost part and parcel of the same organism.
Yeah, it was hanging out in the orchard, in the tree. I mean,
that's
what excites me about a wild ferment and what you're doing here with this entropy, because it, again, I get to go in like a time capsule to that area of Michigan, and I'm drinking it's like I'm sitting on the earth in the soil. I'm able to smell the air through that glass, and that
I think you're
is the
right.
beauty of it.
It really does bring the terroir out.
Absolutely, that's what wild ferments are about.
It should be. I think it's.
Are you adding anything else?
I'm very proud. No sulfites.
That's crazy.
No yeast, no water.
So what?
No sugar.
What have you're brewing?
No sorbate. No.
Nothing.
What else are
no
they
nutrients?
Put?
No nutrients?
No, hell no. Nothing.
Nothing. So that's a very traditional method. That's exactly what they do in Europe, you know, constantly.
Yeah.
They look at Americans, they're like, why are you spending all that money and all that stuff and worry about it? Just like let the apple do.
Right.
And don't worry about what the apple variety
is. It does take a leap of faith. It does take a minute to say, am I confident enough in my cider making skills to let $10,000 worth of apple
juice
and all my labor in this couple of tanks, you know, it almost makes a person religious. But then again, I rely
on sleepless, at night.
Or, is it doing it? Because, it's cold, and for a week or two, it does nothing. And you're like, is it okay?
Slow
but ferment. I know. I've been told so many times by so many people, be patient. And so I'm older now, and I understand be patient means, not tomorrow,
right.
but maybe
couple weeks,
next week. Or
a couple weeks down the line.
Or
I mean,
a month down the line.
That's a wild, wild style.
Next, Philip and I talk about an upcoming Totally Cider tour to Normandy.
I've been there a couple times now.
Oh, have you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
DuPont.
I had Jerome DuPont on the podcast. I was there in
really?
September.
Really? Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, why can I not get this quality of cider anywhere else in Normandy? And they just looked at me and turned their head around because no one else cares this much. It was that simple for them.
There's more cideries than that, than Jerome DuPont. Jerome is there's rock star ciders makers, and I'm kind of interested in not the rock stars that everybody knows about. DuPont is interesting because they're really well known, and they're savvy business people.
Yeah.
But there's cider makers doing the same freaking thing that is just blowing me out of the water. Like Agat Lettier, she's a woman cider maker.
Yeah, I've met several women cider makers there.
She's incredible. Her son started a brewery, so she's the first cider maker that I know of that is doing a hop cider. That's delicious.
Huh.
It's all wild, of course. So we're going to go up to the northern area. We'll do Jerome and DuPont and do Agat Lettier and, some things there. And then we're going to go down into Domfront region because I'm so into pears.
Yeah, right.
If you have listened this far, Ciderville, you are likely kind of hungry for some Ethiopian food, and I definitely recommend having cider. Check out the show notes and photos at ciderchat.com, episode 118. And this little tail end of the new trip coming up this fall in September, the Totally Cider Tour to Normandy, well, you just got a little demitasse. Yes, it is going to be happening the last week of September, and we will be in Pays d'Auge and then going down to Domfront, a bit of the apples and the peri pears, and have some amazing visits with world-class cider makers, also cheese making, cuisine, the whole nine yards, including some sightseeing with castles, some white cliffs of Ithrat and Honfleur. Do contact me, Rhea@ciderchat.com, and I will put you on the growing list of folks who are interested in the Normandy trip to France in September 2018. Thank you to Current Cider of Berkesey, Pennsylvania, Big Fish Cider Company of Monterey, Virginia, and Rambourne Cider Company in Luxembourg for joining the Cider Going Up campaign for commercial cideries who believe and support in this podcast and helping it continue to stay online. You too can join by just going to the Cider Chat Patreon page. You can find a link at ciderchat.com. Next week, we'll be back again. In the meantime, enjoy the spring. And if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, we'll keep on pressing. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!